Thank you, operator. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. This is Ian Thornton. I'm the Head of Investor Relations at Arm. Welcome to this call where we'll be discussing Arm's opportunity in enterprise networking. This is actually part two of the discussion. Part one is available on our investor relations website at www.arm.com/IR. Hopefully, you will also have had time to view the presentation by Colin Alexander, which gives some more background to this discussion. If you have not, then that is also available on our website. On this call today, we're joined by Charlene Marini, who is the VP of Segment Marketing at Arm, and she is responsible for our strategy in enterprise networking. Also, we have Pierre Ferragu, who is the Global Telecoms Equipment and European Semiconductor Analyst for Bernstein. I'll now hand over to Pierre to lead the discussion. Over to you, Pierre.
Thank you, Ian, and thank you, Charlene, to offer me the opportunity to have this time with you, and thank you for the presentation Colin made available on your website. I thought it was extremely useful. I'd like to kick off this Q&A with, and first of all, if you could take us through, in terms of time, how like the networking initiative developed at Arm, when did you get started, what were the first kind of products you've been targeting, when did you sign your first licensing agreements?
Thanks, Pierre. Happy to have the discussion here today. To answer your question, of course, everything within this space has been an evolution, and the chips that are shipping today are Cortex-A9 and Cortex-A15. HiSilicon, which is part of Huawei, made one of the first announcements that they were going to use Cortex-A15 in base station equipment in 2011, or August of 2011, to be specific. Then shortly thereafter, there were announcements from other partners like LSI and TI that they would use Cortex-A15 in networking equipment as well. 2011 was really kind of that beginning in terms of this part of the market in networking. Looking forward, of course, the main opportunity is going to be for the ARMv8 processors, which enable 64-bit with the ARM instruction set. We started working on that in about 2007. We started licensing that architecture in 2009, and we saw first announcements of partners showing their intent to use ARMv8 networking in 2013, and Broadcom was the first one to make that announcement. Since then, we've seen continued momentum with other partners like HiSilicon, Freescale, Altera, Xilinx, and others announcing their intent to use ARMv8 processors for networking. As we kind of go through, that you can also look at some of the partners addressing the server space. As we go through this discussion, I think we'll see that a lot of the attributes in the server space are being applied to networking as well. Partners like Applied Micro, AMD, and Cavium, while their chips are focused on server, we'll see that they can also be used for some networking applications given the types of IP and market engagements they have.
Okay. If we look at a snapshot of the situation today, what is already shipping, and how does like the ramp up in terms of shipments look like for the next 12 months? Let me maybe, well, first of all, what can you tell us about specific products that are shipping, you think, in volumes already today, and what do you think ships in volume in 12 months from now? I think that would be my first question, and then I have a quick follow-up.
Certainly. We see Cortex-A9 and Cortex-A15 shipping in volume in things like intelligent switches today, Wi-Fi access points, and certainly in things like cable or DSL modems. On the access side of wireline network. Of course, in terms of wireless access with base stations, that's just beginning to ramp. We'll see more and more, of course, with the ARMv8 platforms coming out in 2015 and shipping in 2015, that that pipeline will continue to deepen.
Okay. Okay, that's very clear. And so if now, like a follow-up question on where, like a snapshot on where we stand today, could you give us like a very rough idea of how much of the market have you licensed already? I started looking at it and I kind of came to the conclusion that virtually everybody doing networking equipment has already at least taken a license from you guys. Is that a fair assessment?
That is a fair assessment. So the past 2 years, I think we've seen virtually every networking silicon maker and certainly all of the major networking silicon providers taking and announcing ARM licenses. And of course, when Intel completes the acquisition of the Axia product line from Movago, they may also be shipping ARM-based chips.
Okay. Okay. And then in terms of the trajectory of ARM getting into actual chip silicon, how can we think about that? It's a fairly long product cycle industry, I would assume. So that's one thing, like getting ARM into the product cycle may take a few years. And then if you look at your most advanced licensees, how do you feel their approach is? Is that like a ground zero kind of approach? We just forget about all our other processor architecture and we migrate all our product line to all our product lines to ARM, or is it actually a more progressive kind of penetration?
Yeah. So as you state, the product cycles are longer in networking than say in mobile, and they'll vary by the space as well. So for instance, right now we're seeing quite a momentum around new Wi-Fi 802.11ac standards, and so a replacement cycle going on there. And of course with SDN and other trends in the enterprise side, we're seeing maybe a quicker uptake of some new designs there. So there will be pockets where the market will evolve faster and the replacement cycle will take place faster. And so I think those are areas that you'll see ARM-based designs, also because those tend to be areas of newer software where legacy is not an issue. And then you have, as you mentioned, portions of the market that have been based on other architectures for a number of years. And so we're working with the ecosystem to ensure a smooth transition. And really what's happening is a lot of the OEMs and carriers do not want to maintain multiple code bases. So it's really in the interest of our silicon partners to transition their product lines as quickly as they can to the newer ARM architecture, such that OEMs are to meet their goals to simplify their product development and their maintenance support.
Okay, very clear. That's very clear. So you touched on ecosystem migration, and I actually remember like a chat with one of your licensees in the space. I think it was with Freescale, and they were actually telling me about how challenging it is actually for them to migrate a product line to ARM, and that once you do that, all the software that has been developed by themselves, software that has been developed by their clients, needs to be recompiled or adjusted, and that the magnitude of that work was probably more than what they had initially anticipated, and also that the visibility on how is it going to be, when it is going to be completed, basically, was quite challenging. So they, of course, absolutely didn't see that as a showstopper or something that could challenge their decision to migrate to ARM. But it seems that in moving ecosystem, moving legacy is fairly challenging. So would you Would you agree with that assessment? Is that what you see at the moment in the market, or do you think maybe there are pockets of specific players where this is challenging, but you see other places where it's much easier? I think you say that in Wi-Fi enterprise it's easier because there is less legacy. So maybe if you could tell us where you think it's going to be the most challenging, and how it's going to impact the ramp up of your penetration in the space.
Yeah, I think whenever a new architecture enters a new market, there is of course the transition of an ecosystem, and so that's quite natural. I think there are a few dynamics working in our favor. In addition to the OEM consolidation around their platforms and so wanting to minimize the number and different types of code bases they have. Certainly another one is the transition to 64-bit. As Colin mentioned in the web cast that was done, significant pressures on networks in terms of bandwidth today, both from the cloud side on the enterprise, but also on the edge side from subscriber usage. So with that, we are seeing kind of these replacement cycles, as you mentioned, and new ways of structuring the software across networks. And so, and then the increased need for 64-bit, to my previous point. And so if you look where the market is, it's having to transition in terms of software code base throughout most of the market just because of these trends and starting to rely more and more on open source and some of the other things that Colin talked about. And certainly there will be pockets where everyone who designed the software has been gone for 20 years and no one knows what the software does. But there are technologies to enable that in terms of binary translation and compile technologies. So I think we have everything the ecosystem needs to transition, and we've certainly accounted for kind of that phasing of transition and replacement cycles in our forecast.
Okay. Maybe it's a good it's a good point in time maybe to remind us how what sort of guidance like long-term guidance you've given on your expectations. So I think your estimate of your addressable market in networking is in the high teens, close to 20 billion. And you've given some kind of like 25 to 30% penetration targets. Can you remind us on what sort of time horizon do you feel comfortable you can get there? And maybe how much this ecosystem transition dynamics could actually happen faster? Maybe there is like an upside risk to that number, or how much it could be delayed if ecosystem transition is taking longer than what you're expecting today.
Okay, yeah, certainly. So we feel that in 2018 we've given a 25 to 35% target penetration number. So across this broad range of networking. And in terms of your question on ecosystem evolution and the assumptions in those numbers, this is certainly it on the wireless access side, mobile infrastructure side. We're seeing the ecosystem for base station software, et cetera, move over. And so we feel good about that ecosystem, and we think that's on progress. And in terms of more of the core part of wireless and wireline networking, a lot of this is moving to Linux. And so optimized carrier-grade Linux is of use in that market and will continue to grow in that market. So the adoption of Linux in that market is something driving this market penetration. And then in the enterprise networking space, that target number is based on the fact that, again, move to open source software, and also things like needing higher levels of orchestration and optimization at higher levels in the networking stack. And so we see things like Open Daylight, Open vSwitch, a lot of these forums and open source platforms evolving to address that market.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very clear. Thank you. So maybe one last question on just making sure we set the lay of the land and we have all a full picture on what this networking opportunity looks like. So if I think about this $18 billion, that's the number I have in mind, or maybe you communicate 20, or anyway, I don't think it's we are at a stage where this exact number matters a lot. I've tried to, you know, slice it the way we analysts like to do it all the time, and I thought it was actually a very, very varied, I would say, market. So you have a lot of subsegments, you have processors in there, you have FPGAs, you have very, very specialized chips. You have a lot of players. It's a very fragmented market. So if you take Broadcom and Texas Instruments, they are probably both above 10% market share, or close to 10% market share for Texas Instruments. But then all players tend to evolve between like the $300 and the $800 million kind of revenue in networking. So as I couldn't figure out how to segment properly this market, I'm actually returning the question to you. How do you guys think about segmenting the market for you? And maybe the hint I would give you is an easy way for us analysts and industry observers to think about it would be, in networking, you can have a small chip with just one processor. You can have a very big chip with a lot of processors, with a lot of parallel computing. And then you also have big chips with just one small processor or a small number of processors, and a lot of other things with very specialized architecture, like, for instance, FPGAs or the arrays of DSPs, et cetera, et cetera. So if I think about these three categories of chips, first of all, is that a relevant way to think about it for you guys? And second, what would be your rough idea of how the market splits between these three? And of course, how it's going to evolve over time, because as you mentioned, things are changing a lot in the industry.
Yeah, a very complex question. I'll try not to make the answer too complex. In that, as you say, the most important thing here is this is a very diverse market, and so I think your breakout is fair. I think I'd add some context around that. I think you said low ASP. Single processor. I think moving forward, there will be very few single processor designs. I think dual core and maybe even quad core could be the norm, even for what you might consider lower performance, lower ASP designs, because of these trends we're seeing. So something just like a Wi-Fi access point that seems quite simple once you get into the enterprise space, once you get into increasingly maybe even carrier access space with the combination of cellular technologies and Wi-Fi handoff, a lot more control processing is taking place. So that's driving up the complexity there. And in terms of the other end of the spectrum, you could have lower processor density on bigger chips. As you mentioned, this might be a switch fabric, where the switch is taking up billions of transistors, the switch fabric is taking up billions of transistors, excuse me, and the processors are a small portion of that chip. And then, of course, chips that have tens, maybe even hundreds of cores, and those types of designs certainly increasing in terms of the penetration across the spectrum. And so I think, as you know, our business model is highly scalable. We look to address this entire market. In kind of general terms, the simple side, that first, tend to have lower royalty per chip because they have fewer processors, and the processors might not be as complex. As we get to the chips that have more processors, have 64-bit processors, those chips will tend to have higher royalty, and they'll tend to have higher ASPs, as you pointed out, underlying that higher royalty. So we do look at it across the spectrum, and can break it out in those general categories. But in general, we do see that the processing requirements are lifting across that spectrum, even from the low end, moving up.
Okay. And if you think about this very high processing type of architecture versus like architectures where you have a much lower processor count, do you think the latter is going to actually let more and more room for the high processor count, because that's where the market is going? Do you see places where you would have just one processor and a gigantic FPGA array being replaced by application-specific processors, application-specific chips with a lot of processors? How do you see that evolving?
Yeah, that is a trend in some places, not necessarily the FPGA replacement, but a simple chip being replaced by maybe a more complex chip. And a lot of that's due to integration. So in many cases, it's actually multiple chips being replaced by a single chip that will integrate more of the intelligence onto a single die or a multi-die package. So we will see more of that, and we are seeing that today. And then at the same time, we're seeing intelligence being put into places that previously there was no intelligence. So switches are a good example. Traditionally, they've been no processing capability. There are now places where switches increasingly have processing capability. Trends like SDN, which require the termination of some protocols on the switch itself, add more complexity and the need for processing in some switch fabrics. So we're seeing both higher integration of existing platforms, and a base station baseband platform is a good example of that. But we're also seeing intelligence now popping up in other parts of the network, and so processing capability being added there.
Okay. So more processing capabilities, more raw processing volume, and more integration would be the two trends. Okay.
Yeah.
Very clear. Thank you. And one thing, just jumping on from my memory, I remember reading stuff about, I wonder if it's not Microsoft looking into that, but who are looking at actually a kind of opposite movement where they would actually use, especially for search, processors combined with FPGAs and kind of non-processing logic to accelerate the processing of their search engine. So I don't know how much this is already tangible and a trend that could emerge on the server side, on the pure processing side. But I was wondering if in networking this is also something you could see, places where the very high level of compute requirements could see emerging actually alternatives to pure raw processing processing power, and being replaced by processors being mixed up with faster, more dedicated type of elements like an FPGA.
Yeah, Pierre, you bring out a really good point. And certainly the underpinnings of networking have always relied on acceleration, and the architectures that have evolved because of, you know, where technology has been and et cetera, has been kind of the separation of that compute part of the code of the equipment with the acceleration technology and scheduling and other things that need to happen in networking for latency and throughput reasons. And with this increasing integration, what's happening is those are being combined onto single chips. So whether that is FPGAs that are adding compute subsystems, as Altera and Xilinx have done, to address certain parts of the market that still need a lot of flexibility in the acceleration portion, so they want to be able to have a fast path in the FPGA logic that they can program, or whether it be a chip that has a combination of the general purpose ARM processors, but also some more programmable types of processing and accelerators with a software development kit on top that an end user can then program in a generic way, but not as generic as, say, the general purpose processors. And so enabling, again, that fast throughput and lower latency than you would get just using a high single-threaded general purpose processor. And we definitely see the market moving more and more towards that. And some of the initiatives that Colin mentioned in the presentation are really enabling for that. One primary one is an API called Open Data Plane. And so this is all about abstracting that logic I mentioned, that kind of acceleration, fast path logic out. And so now OEMs will have a common interface to program that type of logic, whether it is a chip from vendor X or a chip from vendor Y, and they won't need to pay attention to what the specific hardware components are on that chip.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very clear. So lot of things could move from where we stand today. Now, if we move on to like the second batch of questions I had in mind, which were more about how you see the market structure evolving over time. So if I try and take a snapshot of where we stand today, we know that Intel, with like maybe 30% of like the processor, like discrete processor market in networking, maybe has like clearly less than 10% share of this 18 billion kind of market. So the footprint of Intel is actually of x86 is actually relatively small. Then I think MIPS and PowerPC are kind of like the other legacy architectures we find in networking. So is that fair to say that in the long run it's going to be ARM and Intel, and that's it? Other architectures are likely to disappear over time based on the comments you made earlier about your clients not being willing to maintain multiple architectures?
I think it's fair to say that there's a consolidation of architectures, as you mentioned, and given the licensing momentum we've seen in the announcements of PowerPC and MIPS silicon users transitioning to ARM, that the market is moving to two architectures, as you mentioned.
Okay. And so is it going to be Intel keeping its kind of 5% 5 to 7% footprint I just estimated, and you guys taking the 93 to 95% remaining footprint, or do you think Intel has also an opportunity to increase its presence in networking? If we listen to what the company says, if we look at what the company is doing, they seem to be fairly active in the space. So how do you read their behavior at the moment?
I've stepped back and say there's a huge opportunity in networking for silicon providers today, for all the reasons we've mentioned, a great amount of innovation and investment going on in the market. And So clearly everyone is trying to meet the needs of this market and address this market. We generally view the types of discrete processors that you mentioned as the primary market for x86 today as being in points in the network that are most like a server in terms of the processing capabilities, and the ARM ecosystem providing the operational parts of the network that really require the high throughput and lower latency, which is most, the highest proportion of the types of workload and processing that go on. So we think our ecosystem is very well poised in terms of engagements with the end users. The existing ecosystem, certainly the ecosystem that's transitioning, and of course my team is working very hard on what we feel the future ecosystem will need to be around these software-defined types of networking technologies. So I think Intel and x86, they'll need to make similar types of investments and look where the market is going. And it's hard to say, how successful any one player will be as they address this kind of rapidly evolving market.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let me maybe give you the kind of simplified long-term perspective with which I like to think about that question. With this whole SDN story, everybody I would be tempted to say almost my kids would know what a data plane is and what a control plane is. So you have this idea that the data plane components have to basically do the heavy lifting and forwarding at a very high speed packets of information through the network, and then you have the control plane that is basically trying to think through the process and give instruction to these data planes components. So that's kind of where we want to see the network evolving. So a control plane that has a very open and normalized and codified and I would say open source kind of communicating with the data plane. And I think the next step of the thinking would be, today any sort of processing is being run on the cloud. We see every single equipment vendor offering their core product like an Evolved Packet Core, or even the edge product like edge routers, actually running on the core, running on the cloud, running from distance data centers. The most amazing example of that we see that the first networking, I would say, components that are going to run on a cloud environment are going to be set-top boxes. So the set-top box you have at home that is from which you get all your service, etc., is going to become a pure packet forwarding kind of box, and then all the intelligence of the service you're going to be delivered is going to be coming from a cloud somewhere in the country, if not somewhere else on the planet. So if I think of about the evolution of networks along these lines, all the control plane is going to end up in the cloud, and all the packet forwarding, all the data plane is going to stick to the box. And then maybe that's a way to think about how the world is going to split between Intel and ARM, because Intel will have the upper hand in a cloud environment, in a large data center environment, and ARM will have the upper hand on the highly integrated data plane chips. So what would be your reaction to that kind of conceptual vision of the world? Is that the right direction? Is that where we are going, or am I missing something?
Well, I think when people talk about cloud, and I'm glad you bring up the set-top box one, because that's one we're actively working on, and so I'll kind of draw that into this answer. They think of, as you say, a massive, large data center somewhere very far away, and then you're thinking of the endpoint. In reality, what we're seeing is, instead of that intelligent endpoint and the intelligent cloud and a dumb network in between, we're actually starting to see a more intelligent network. And on top of that, what I call dispersed cloud. And so in things like set-top box and kind of cloud, we're actually seeing more experiments where cloud-based systems are sitting in the network for the set-top box offload, and people looking at workload-optimized types of deployment. So they're not looking at what has been kind of the traditional legacy server of a high single thread general purpose processor. They're actually looking at systems that are SoC based that allow workload optimization for very high density and over the lifespan then, very low, or I should say lower operating costs. And so our view is that you're actually going to see more of this intelligent network. Think of the cloud as actually a dispersed cloud. And with that, both of those elements looking at workload optimization and flexibility. So optimize for certain types of tasks, but have the orchestration and the software such that you can evolve services very quickly, change services, and deploy new services very quickly, but still with an optimized underlying infrastructure.
Okay, that's very interesting. I actually wish my good friend John Chambers were on the call with us today, because he's been trying to convince and to evangelize the planet about his concept of fog computing, this idea that you would need compute and processing power and intelligence at every level of the network, just like the very centralized cloud, and no intelligence in the rest of the network is not the best option. So is that fair to say that you would agree with that view, and you may think whatever you want about the wording fog computing, but this idea that compute is going to be actually very distributed in the network is the future?
Yeah, I think we're aligned with that view. I mean, and we're already starting to see parts of that today, and certainly as you look at IoT and the discussions that are happening around IoT, and the different types of requirements for control of billions of nodes, the dependency is to really see how we can solve some of those problems in the edge of the network so that you're not creating more and more pressures back at the data center in highly condensed kind of cloud environment.
Okay. So there was one way to think about it, which is cloud environment versus distributed. So the idea that all processing would go to the cloud, all the control plane could go to the cloud, and only the data plane would stick to the distributed network is probably not the right way to think about it. Then there is another conceptual divide in the market, which should be and I think some of Colin's slides touch very well on that. There are places where you need super high power, super high performance, single-threaded processing. And there are places where actually you need a lot of parallel and multi-threaded processing, and where you need also, I think, a lot of integration. So if I recall one of Colin's slides, Mac controlling is a place where high processing single threading is important. The control plane, of course, is where raw processing and single threaded processing is very important. And then I think you have the data plane where integration and multi-threaded highly parallel architectures is probably what matters the most. And there was a fourth box on that side, but I have to admit I can't remember what the fourth box was. So the way I think about it is where Intel, without making any comment on who wins where, et cetera, not thinking about it on a relative basis between ARM and Intel, but more thinking about where Intel is more at ease and when ARM is more at ease, is that fair to say that Intel will feel more comfortable where this very high performance requirement is, which would be the control plane and maybe MAC scheduling, and then places the highly parallel parallel architectures and multi-thread and integration is important. Of course, the beautiful flexibility of the ARM model would be the most successful. Is that a fair way to think about it, at least directionally?
I guess I would add the context that with increasing levels of integration, you're not going to have as many separate applications that are just, you know, a control plane box. And so the balance between control plane and data plane and the tight coupling of control and data plane becoming more important is something that's lending towards SoC, certainly, capabilities. But also where the ARM roadmap is going and even where our architecture partners are going. So I don't think moving forward you can assume that x86 will have the, you know, single high-threaded performance advantage that you might see or might have seen in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very clear. I'd love to continue on these very technical topics, but I'm conscious of time, and so maybe I would move on to like a broader perspective, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on how you think you guys are impacting the value chain. So my first question would be very simply and maybe very candidly, could you tell us who were your biggest sponsors when you got into networking? Who were all excited about talking to you among chip manufacturers, of course, and one level above amongst equipment vendors and then among service providers? And of course, there's a flip side of that question. Who was like kind of resisting ARM and who perceived you at least initially as a threat?
Interesting question. Yeah, I think in general, the resistance to ARM or to change is usually in pockets of the market where there is legacy and people do not want to invest. But as we've mentioned, the transformation going on in infrastructure has created real pressures for carriers, for OEMs, and then for the silicon partners that supply them. So I think it's fair to say that the market has really been looking towards a way to provide more efficient solutions. And so that is everything from kind of the physical solution, the, you know, higher density, better performance, and power optimized, to, as we mentioned earlier, a consolidation on code bases, being able to use more open source software, et cetera. So that all has really been positive in terms of the reception that we've gotten from the various parts of the value chain. And I think you just need to look to things like Linaro, which is a nonprofit foundation that is dedicated to providing optimized Linux upstream into the Linux kernel around ARM-based platforms. And in that group, we have a networking group. And members of that networking group include pretty much the broad spectrum of our silicon partners, so at Broadcom, Applied Micro, and Freescale, TI. I'm going to leave probably some off, but, you know, the broad spectrum, as well as OEMs like NSN and Cisco. So we've had really, I think, positive momentum and a good reception from the value chain.
Okay. Great. And I think I'll probably just limit myself to just one last question, and that will be my concluding question. You know, a lot of observers looking at this evolution and looking at a concentration of processor architectures in networking will immediately think about commoditization. So if everybody is selling chips with ARM architectures on them, this is going to be a commodity market. So some will argue doing networking chips is going to become a commodity business. Some will argue doing networking equipment is going to become a commodity business. And then like the conclusion of that whole line of thought would be, well, ARM is actually going to increase efficiency, reduce price of equipment, etc., but it also means ARM is going to badly hurt the profit pools of the value chain. What would be your reaction to that?
Yeah, I think broadly ARM is enabling innovation in the right places, and I think it's really up to the carriers and the OEMs and their strategies on how this market evolves and what parts of the market are commoditized and which aren't. I think the ARM business model enables the flexibility for these new types of networks. And we have to remember that networking chips are some of the most, I would say they are the most complex chips across markets. And so these types of things, Broadcom just announced a new switch chip, for instance, with trillions of transistors. They're very complex, and so that I think is going to keep the value up in the networking silicon market, because there are many more components that go into it in addition to the general purpose compute.
Thank you very much. And I say it was my last question, so I'll refrain myself from asking like the many more I would have. Thank you very much for taking the time to do this call. I learned a lot, and thank you all for taking the time also to listen to us. And I'll hand over to Jan for closing remarks.
Well, thank you, Pierre. Thank you, Charlene. Certainly, I know that we've taken lots of notes at this end, and I think you've answered most of the questions that certainly I've been asked over the last few months about our opportunity in enterprise networking. So thank you for everybody who's dialed into the call. We hope you've also found this useful. Just so you know, we are planning a call in Q4 about ARM V8 potential penetration into smart mobile devices going forward. There'll be more information about that coming up on our website later. So thank you very much indeed, and a good evening, good afternoon, good morning to you all. Thank you.